apparently this father in Italy wants to do a beauty contest, but you have to be a nun to go in for it.
When you say father, you mean a priest, do you?
I mean a priest, yeah. Father Rungi, a moral theologian with his own blog, said the nuns would not wear swimsuits or revealing outfits. What he valued most in a woman was inner beauty. And someone said, what ideal is actually, well, Sophia Loren is my top inner beauty. Nothing on the outside there.
Yeah. And then we were talking about her on the way in, weren't we? Saying that Sophia Loren's sister married Mussolini's son, who was a jazz pianist.
Well, I never. That blesses me so much. I can't worry.
Yes, I like to bring something to the table.
Fantastic. When he also said, bearing in mind it's inner beauty he was after, they have to be between 18 and 40. Best if they're young and attractive and preferably Brazilian. Brazilian girls above all, he said. They're very, very pretty. And someone said, what the potential is of this is a marvellous tool for spreading the Christian message.
To whom?
Well, so how then. Can a beauty pageant of nuns spread the
Hello everyone, this is the Saffron Planet Show. In the next half an hour we're going to take you through the discussions that we've had recently on the show. I've got Steve with me, I'm Simon, I've got Steve with me, we're just going to talk you through what we have. I can assure you it's going to be the most interesting half hour that you could have this week.
Okay, well we've got three conversations. We're going to look at a news item about someone who had to do 50 things before he died, and then we'll tell you what happened next. Then we're doing Men in Church, what's special about Men in Church. But first, it's over to Simon, because this was a question that he posed about Hitler and the Jews.
Oh, that's right. This was going back a couple of weeks when we all got together, and I think it was nearing the end of the day, and I just needed to inject a new topic, and I came up with this. How can we reconcile in our hearts the possible fact that Hitler might be in heaven and the Jews might be in hell? The Holocaust Jews might have gone to hell because they did not accept Jesus. Yeah. And at the same time, Hitler, or in general, nasty, evil people. If Hitler had been caught, and sent to jail and found Jesus in jail, say, he would have gone to heaven.
Absolutely.
I think Goebbels was a practicing Catholic.
Right.
I think so. It's so more for him, actually.
I mean, Hitler was brought up in a Benedictine school. He was in Austria along with Eichmann. They both went to the same school. All strangely enough, with what was his name, Jewish philosopher. They went to the same school. Jewish philosopher. Oh, I don't remember.
Kafka.
No.
Woody Allen.
Spinoza. Spinoza.
No.
Moses.
No. Nietzsche.
Jesus.
Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Mason.
Johnny.
I'm Krusty the Clown.
I should record it at home and you can just slot it in. Right? Yeah. You know, that's Roosevelt.
There wasn't even an element
of
discussion.
Anyway, having said that, the fact that he was brought up in a Catholic school, possibly by a very dodgy teacher who managed to teach him and Adolf Eichmann all manner of things, goodness knows what they taught him, he definitely was not a Christian by any stretch of the imagination. He believed that in a sense, quite rightly, that Christianity was a Jewish plot. Yeah. So I sort of agree with him on that one.
He was heavily into astrology.
He was heavily into the New Age. He believed in the solid earth theory. He believed that the earth was a hollow within a solid universe. He believed anything and everything that came along.
He was well into the occult, folk religion from the past.
And we've all seen the Indiana Jones film where he tries to get the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Is that Hitler?
Well, he was one of them, was he?
He was after all sorts of so-called magic artifacts.
Such evil
can still be sent to heaven through a small decision that they make later on in life.
But I think one of the things is that Goebbels was a practicing Catholic.
And yet,
right.
But he wasn't. I think it's one of those things of like.
But he was one of the architects of the Nazis as well. So
well, again, you've got to realise that a portion of the Catholic Church did actually propagate a lot of very anti-Jewish
theories. The difficulties, and I think you hit on the point when you said a small decision, and that's the thing. Being a Christian, being a follower of God is not a small decision, and I think someone like Goebbels made a small decision to be Christian-ish, to take part in Christian acts, to be involved in a church. But if he genuinely was a Christian, which means having a relationship with God through Jesus, that would impact his life to a point that he wouldn't orchestrate the murder of millions of people, and he wouldn't have made a small decision. He'd have made a big decision that would have continued throughout his life, and he would have continued to repent.
What about Simon White saying, "Okay, what about if on his deathbed he repented and went to heaven?"
I believe that is a genuine possibility. I have grave doubts that he did that, but it is possible that it could happen.
But what?
Because it would require the most immense repentance, because it would mean he would have to really see the absolute evil that he was both part of, and that he was led to commit through the belief system that he came to. And his belief system involved all sorts of occult and New Age practices, even certain within the Death's Head Gestapo, there was even quite a heavy Buddhist input. So there's
if your life is so saturated with all that stuff, deathbed conversions probably don't come very easily to someone that is so deep.
Possibly that is beyond our knowledge. We know the people we know that are definitely going to go to heaven that made the real genuine decision. I don't think any of us can say that person definitely didn't go to heaven.
Okay. So what do we all think about what happens to Jewish people?
Well, again, you've got the same situation, really.
So is it that hard?
I don't know. I mean, I would be a little bit different
I think myself, actually.
In some difficult way, that's a unique factor. I think,
because
with the Holocaust, it was the Jewish people, the fact that they were persecuted for reasons that were couched in Christianity.
But what about, they're also homosexuals and gypsies, so are we saying that the Jews that were persecuted in the Holocaust, they're sort of covered, but homosexuals and gypsies, they're not covered? I haven't actually said that they were covered.
But I'm saying that there's a unique situation with Jewish people in that Christians themselves created barriers to stop Jews turning to Christ because of making them actually hate the name of Christ, actually hate anything to do, I mean, to actually be anti-gospel in the way they evangelise.
The witness of Christians has a lot to factor into the problem that Jewish people had with Christians.
And I can't see, I mean, you do hear that there have been stories of a lot of Jewish people in concentration camps actually becoming believers.
That's right.
There are testimonies.
Yes. You've got to realise that was part of the satanic attempt to get rid of Jewish people. And what happened very shortly after the war was the reinstatement of Israel as a nation. So this was all part of the satanic attempt to destroy the Jews. What impact that has on their salvation is an unknown. I would not like to speak on,
because you have to go back to if the Bible says anything about that, a situation which would arise. I mean, my problem is, if God was aware of the Holocaust, would he have put somewhere in the Bible some clause or some sort of hint that there'd be salvation for the Holocaust Jews?
But saying that, but the Holocaust was an atrocity.
No. If it meant so much, the last of many.
I mean, as many Jews proportionally were killed early, in the medieval times Crusades, going right back through
Jews in general.
What repentance is and what becoming a Christian is about God changing your heart, and it's not a decision you make to a sense. We don't have as much power as we like to think we have over it. And it's about getting to a place where you allow God to change your heart. And that is the thing. And whether God can do that in any situation. That doesn't mean that the situation is good, you know. God allows things to happen. You know, we cannot turn around and say we can't turn around and say the Second World War and all these things
were part of God's plan.
Yeah, and at the same time, we can't say that God didn't stop them because he couldn't. What we have to say is God has his permissible will. Sometimes he allows us to do things that are ridiculous, but within that, God can still reach people in those dark situations. We do not have to have a good time and a good life for God to meet us. In fact, with some people, they have to have a difficult time for God to really meet with us. And that's the most important thing, that God meets us, not that we enjoy it along the way. So whether people are in heaven or not is not about whether they've had a good life. It's about whether at any point during that life, no matter how good or bad it's been, they have been able to have God change their heart and their opinions of things. And the reason why people like, in my opinion, Hitler and Goebbels, there's nothing in their life that to me suggests that they have a relationship with God, is because God didn't change their heart, or else they wouldn't have behaved the way they did. Maybe in their last moments, who knows, but in their life, what we see of it, there's no record that says God changed their heart and changed their outlook on things and changed the life, because it would affect their behavior.
But how much of what you say is actually scriptural, and how much of it is based on the need to have justice and the natural need for every human to know that there is an ultimate justice?
Well, there's a human, there's a worldly justice, and there's God's justice. And then with God's justice, I mean, Jesus died for all the sin of mankind. And if somebody accepts and repents, and genuinely repents, not just says the words, but means in their heart, it's deeply filled with sorrow in their heart for what they've done, then they can accept Jesus' death on that cross was greater than all of the sin of mankind, including the Holocaust, including everything that the Nazis did, including everything everybody's done in history that's evil and bad and against God's will. Jesus' death on the cross was greater than that and paid for all of that in abundance. And so if someone genuinely repents, whatever depth of darkness they've got into has been covered by that death on the cross.
What if
people...
So we've just heard that that conversation, which I didn't actually realise I was going to open such a can of beans. Is it can of beans?
Can of worms.
Can of worms. I don't know. I'm really, really hungry. but a good reaction, I think, and a good study, I think, into what actually...
It's a very big subject, and we've only just touched the surface of it. But
and the thing is, we could be right or we could be wrong. I mean, it all depends on the way we interpret what it says in the Bible, and obviously you might have a different opinion. We do have the website for you to comment on.
Good idea.
I think we should now skip to a conversation that I remember having, which is really funny. I'll let you explain what it was.
Well, this is the news item about the man who did had to do 50 things before he died. And without telling you any more about that, we'll go straight over to it.
Cool.
I read something very poignant in the newspaper today, or the other day. An advertising executive who wrote Traveller's Bible, 100 Things to Do Before You Die, has died before completing his list. Dave Freeman, 47, fell and hit his head at his home. A bit sad, isn't it?
Well, it's very sad. How many things did he actually achieve then before
About half of them.
All right.
Yeah.
But you know what? Ironically, he's probably now going to go down in history more so than if he'd stayed alive. I think that book is probably going to sell so much more because now it's in the news.
Yeah.
He's now got, like, the book has found almost like a legacy, and he's now got his name.
Is the irony value.
And it's like John Lennon selling more records after his death than before. James Dean, you know, his films are so much more popular because
This is just a silly little book.
Did he really have time to write a will?
I don't know.
Because that was number 60, I think. And
one thing is write a will. That was the last one. then you could die. it's a bit sad. I think it tells you that no one knows
when their time is up, when the Grim Reaper is going to come a visiting. Some of us may be closer due to you being a bit older than the rest of us. And,
It's not age, it's recklessness.
Recklessness.
Health.
Yeah, we might have found that some of the stuff that he did wasn't good for his health and made him more susceptible. Yeah, might have contributed. You know. Apparently he inspired dozens of like-minded books with titles such as 100 Things Project Managers Should Do Before They Die and 100 Things Cowboy Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die.
So he seems to be preoccupied with death.
Yeah.
Why would he be writing about death all the time?
I think because he found a sort of a niche, isn't he? I suppose it's, you know, it's about making money.
I don't think it's so much to do about him dying. It's more what you can get out of the world before you do.
Yeah.
Assuming that you're going to die.
I'm surprised that there isn't a Christian book that's come out on the, you know, because Christian books tend to sort of tap into the secular market and sort of do sort of watered down versions of like, you know, Christian casino, 100 prayers you should pray before you die, 100 people you should convert before you die,
10 things you should not admit to doing while doing conducting a revival
before you die.
I think it's a bit sad if you write a list of things that you want to do before you die, and you've done them all, and then you're still alive.
Nothing to live for.
So what's, you know, isn't it better to actually die having things that you haven't accomplished yet? Yeah. At least you've been active all your life.
Yeah, but then you could have brought the sequel out, 100 other things. 100 other things to do before you die. You can bring another book out.
As and you know, another one on top of that, 100 things what to stop doing before you die.
Yes.
If you went to go to heaven, then there could be at least 100 things.
Yeah, at least. Simon, can you think of 100 things you should be stopped
there
doing?
There you go, Simon. You go to divulge.
Now, can I just say, it's like... an interesting story there.
The only sure thing in life, isn't it?
You know what? I think it's good that we can talk about it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So amongst many, many things. Another taboo.
Coming up next.
Actually, it's not really taboo, but it is about church, and it is about a side of church that I don't think is often spoken enough about.
Men in church. Yeah. This is it.
So men in church.
Without saying any more, we'll go straight over to it.
Very good.
On this,
I think
no names to be.
No, no. I just think a lot of problems. There's apparently there's a big decline with men in the church, and I think it's partly because a lot of men don't really see what being a Christian as a man can do.
I think it turns a man off having to worship another man, as in Jesus. I think for your everyday man to go to a church and be
hold on, go to Man United, see what happens. Where the goal scored.
Yeah,
the worship to men.
Yeah, but it's different because this is somebody you're being told to worship. You can choose to worship a football.
You go there virtually everyone, and arms in the air, singing. Well, you know.
But for a guy, a guy that likes football, to go to a church on a Sunday when he should be recovering.
Yeah, I'm not saying that those are the same people Saturday that go to church. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but that's an example of men worshiping. Church doesn't appeal to a lot of men.
No, the church has become very feminine.
Yeah,
I think a lot of women are moving up.
I think part of it is to do with the presentation of Christianity by some people as being something that is imbibed with a lot of sentiment.
Yeah,
and I think that is a wrong representation. I think it really isn't a sentimental thing.
No.
I think sentimentality in Christianity is a wrong ingredient.
Too much love, not enough judgment.
That's right. Yeah.
But I think part of it's not even love and judgment. It's
too much turn, not enough burn.
There's a lot of church. There's a lot of church that like they use emotion far too much to the point that they don't actually create Christians. They create people that get hyped up. I realised I've just bought a little iPod, right? Which is nice. And I was listening to I listen to Christian music, I listen to secular music. I don't think there's a big issue, obviously, you've got to be careful what you listen to. But I was listening to some non-Christian music, and I realised that in many ways, it made me feel what I'd feel at church listening to Christian music, which challenged me, because I realised, wait there, that means I'm not actually worshipping. If I can have the same emotional creation from something that's completely godless as something that I believe to be of God, then there is no God in that. That is all my emotions being risen up. And the problem is, the church now is so based on getting you to see God really just sort of nicely and prettily and playing some nice, maybe a little bit sad music to build up your emotions. And men don't respond to that because, as you know, men are made... you know, we're made in the image of God, we're made to fear God, we're made to understand the power of God. But church has decided, instead of showing us the power of God and the truth of God, they're going to try and just sort of make us feel like cozy and warm and a bit sad.
Is it because of the feminine influences?
No, I think it's a feminine influence. I think it's because people have decided it's more important to add people to the church, numbers, than it is to actually present God clearly and honestly to people. They're more worried, they want thousands of people in their churches, and they know that an honest portrayal of the gospel will win over genuine converts, but it won't necessarily mean that, you know, 100 people will change like that.
I think there are churches that do take the honest route.
Oh, yeah, definitely, I'm not saying at all. But I'm saying I think men now perceive the church as something that's emotional. It's going to try. It tries to pull on emotional heartstrings. Sometimes it tries. I've seen it before. They try and pick on bits of your past, and you know, use it as analogies and almost sort of not blackmail, but make you feel bad, as it were. When actually, sort of, the nature of the gospel is very honest and true, and about the nature of who you are as a man. You know, how you, what you are in front of God, how you deserve, you know, the judgment of God, but how God's mercy meant that judgment goes on Christ. But what we see in church nowadays is, oh, you're having problems at home. Oh, you've got, you haven't got enough money, have you? Well, look, oh, isn't it sad? Oh, but Jesus likes you.
It's funny because I've seen how it changed, because in, back in the 19th century, it used to be called, Christianity was like the muscular religion, muscular Christianity, where boys' comics would be full of heroes sort of conquering mountains and and sort of digging bayonets into the fuzzy wuzzies, for want of another word, and all male pursuits, and it was all under the Christian banner, and it's always, you know, when they say that cleanliness is next to godliness, and all these virtues, and
actually it's not very, biblical either.
Not even biblical, no. But the idea that, you know, that
God helps best, those who help themselves.
Yeah, it's all these things. Yeah, to do a British empire, it's like empire sort of stuff.
So saying, you know, guys respond to activism rather than emotionalism. And actually,
and ideas,
and it's funny because FaithWorks, the magazine that I work with, they just issued a survey going out to all of its readership, and it, that, you know, the figures are that it's like 70% of social activism is actually male.
Oh, really?
And I think that's what males, I think that's why they would go
doing
to church.
Stuff. Doing stuff.
It's actually, you know, making a difference. Yeah. Rather than getting wrapped up in emotionalism, I think guys react more. Even as sexual beings, we are more, we sort of react more to the physical, and we're more
also,
like...
men go out to work. They're like, you know, working, doing, you know, actually doing a job and performing something.
We're a lot more carnal, rather than women are more emotional.
Yeah.
We're, they're built that way. To, you know,
so, how can we rid the church of this female influence then?
I think the thing...
There's no women here.
I think what the church needs to do is not become activational or emotional, just honest and true. Because actually,
proper balance.
God will deal with your emotions, and if you're part of an active church, and if you genuinely seek to be a part of God, you will labour for him. You know, he even talks about there being labour in heaven and stuff like that, you know. You know, God does not call us to just chill. He calls us to be part of his kingdom and see it grow. Yeah. So there are, it will deal with the emotional side, and it will deal with the active side, both in men and women. Yeah. But we can't use these two things as the pure, only, singular vehicle to get people to faith, because that's not what it's about. It's about the actual gospel of Jesus, and that needs to be presented in honesty and without any bias either way.
So I think that the emotional side of it has to be real, and I take it back to the word sentimental. I think it's sentimental is where emotionalism goes wrong, when it becomes sentiment. And I think that's something that needs to be looked at.
And that comes in from the world romanticism.
It is. It's romantic. It comes in from, and it's almost Dickensian, you know. Yeah. It's almost like that. Oh, poor little Bob Cratchit. Oh. You know, and it's all of that
Tim.
Stuff. Tiny Tim, was it? Oh, right, Bob Cratchit.
No. But like, lots
got
of
your point.
It's all Dickens, isn't it?
Lots of Christians like.
What Dickens do I know?
Lots of Christians like a friend of mine had to give his testimony, and before him were two women. No problem. They did fine testimonies, and they're all genuine, you know, people that found their faith and stuff. But you do notice the difference between these two women that gave their testimony very honestly, and some of them, you know, broke down. That's not a bad thing. But it was all very much, it was a very emotion-driven thing. And then when my mate Steve went up and did his, it was very, look, this is where I was, this is what happened, this is where I am now. Yeah. And it's not so saying that, it wasn't that one was bad and one was good, that the women wasn't genuine because they cried, because actually, you know, God will sometimes make us feel a bit like that, make us, you know, in awe and all that sort of thing. But you can see there is a difference between how men react with God and how men get to know God and how women do. And the church needs to not be on either side. So, the church's only job is to be honest.
Men's got to be men, women got to be women, and the church has to understand the difference.
And sometimes, but sometimes it isn't always a total polarised thing. Mm. Sometimes there are elements that cross over between the two. Yeah. There are grey areas.
Men finding their feminine side.
Men can be emotional, and women can be masculine
side. You never hear about that, do you?
Say that again?
Women finding their masculine side. You always talk about men
finding
their
feminine.
Things
called being a lesbian, actually.
Yeah. I mean, what is the masculine side of a female?
Well, those practical things.
Well, Monica does woodwork, so I suppose that's her masculine
Kim
side.
Kim does the decorating.
Oh, there you go. What's your feminine side? Do a bit of cooking.
Oh, I cry a lot when I watch films.
I think
not really.
The church. I hope
it's very really badly made.
I think
he's trying to make a point there.
Look,
sorry,
I think the church's aim is to understand their gospel and understand their God and present it clearly, because the gospel is neither really, really activational. Mm. It's neither for men or women. It's for both. So it sense. It doesn't. Yeah. And you know, if you can just do that properly, you'll have genuine converts. If you rely on music and little bits and pieces, if you rely on people's over-the-egged testimonies, and also if you rely on people becoming, I know lots of people that take guys to like football clubs and stuff, and they get to lots of other Christians, but it doesn't work because you make mates, but you don't encounter God. No. And actually, to encounter God genuinely and to become a Christian, whether you're male or female, all you need is the gospel and the lineage from mankind from beginning to where we are with Jesus. That needs to be presented honestly, and then it's God's job to change the heart. But our job as the church and as Christians is to present it very honestly and very clearly, not relying on getting guys involved with things so that they come along, not relying on cheesy music and stuff to get people upset and feel guilty, just very clearly displaying it and letting God do his work. As soon as we start trying to do it ourselves, that's where the power is lost, and I think that's partly the reason why we've got problems. We've taken we don't care much about the actual
preaching.
Too
much of the world has seeped into the church. The church trying to be too conforming,
because in a way, though, with its own heart, the problem's been that the church has cared more about bringing people in, and which, I mean, we are to care about that, but we're also to do it the right way, and also bringing people into
quality,
the church,
not quantity,
and also bringing people into the church does not necessarily mean bringing people into the kingdom of God. You know, it says, you know, depart from thee, I never knew. There will be people that will stand in front of God and God say, well,
so many churches have a minority of people in the church who are actually Christians. A lot of them are just there to do something on the Sunday or like...
Which, again, is part of that male... side. That's the danger with the whole active male thing, is you get men involved in church, but they never actually open up their heart to the Spirit of God. They think, well, I'm doing stuff in the church, you know, I'm helping stack the chairs, I'm whatever.
Yeah. So, again, churchianity... Yeah. Not Christianity.
Yep.
So all we need is honest presentation of the planet.
You've been listening to Saffron Planet, who are the Maltsworth and Jeffrey family and their friends. Produced and edited by Steve Maltz, music by Howard Worth, and mixed by Steve Jeffrey. You can listen to more of these chats on saffronplanet.net. Thank you and goodbye.